From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's Thursday, May 10th, 2012, and we are broadcasting from our studios at the Feeding Arizona Complex in Youngtown, Arizona, which is also home of the Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. I'm Pete Peters, and I want to let everybody know that, first of all, Deborah's still finishing up some projects. I'm wondering if she's ever going to come back here again. I'm going to have to ask her that. I think maybe she doesn't want to do that. No, I know she wants to. But we're going to get her back here again here real soon because it's always a joy to have her here, and I get to work half as hard that way. So I got to make sure that I take care of that. In addition to this radio program, I want everybody to know that we do publish some mini-books and e-books. Many of our e-book authors are on this network, the Boomer the Babe Network, with their own shows, and we invite you to listen to them when you can. Always good information from those folks as well. We produce promotional products, and we also consult for small businesses. Our latest endeavor in our in the media things that we do is Boomer Experience Speaks, which that new edition should be coming out shortly. Go to boomerandthebabe.com, sign up for Experience Speaks. It'll come free to your inbox every month. Good information from our show hosts and many of our guests that we've had on the show are contributors to that magazine. Today we have a very fun and fun-filled hour in store for you. We have a lady with us that is well-known as a mommy blogger, and she is also an author. Her name is Kate Hopper, and according to October 2010 article in Ad Age, there are 3.9 million mommy bloggers. Kate Hopper is widely published in the Star Tribune, Literary Mama, Red Book, and the New York Times. She comes with great credentials. Kate Hopper, thank you very much for being with us, and welcome to the Boomer the Babe Show.
Thanks so much, Pete, for having me. Yes, I have been a blogger for, going on 5 or 6 years now, and I started writing about motherhood after the premature birth of my daughter in 2003. She was born 2 months early after I developed severe preeclampsia, and I had to withdraw from graduate school. I was getting my master's in fine arts and creative writing at the time, and I withdrew and was home with my daughter, who was fragile and very fussy, for 5 long Minnesota winter months. And it was during that time, for the first time, I mean, I clearly was a writer before, but I spent a lot of time procrastinating. And it was only after Stella was born that I really felt driven to get my experience down on the page. And that was partly because I wasn't finding any books out there that detailed kind of the experiences that I was having as an isolated new mother. So I began working on a memoir. I went to the coffee shop when she was 5 months old and sort of started to get images down from when she was in the hospital. And that turned into a memoir that's being shopped around. But as I started talking about my project, it was interesting because I realized that some people weren't taking me seriously because I was writing about motherhood. And It seems like a subject that some people don't think is worthy of real literature. And so I kept writing, and then I started a blog on which I review motherhood literature, and I also interview authors, mother writers. And then I developed a class called, which is called Motherhood in Words, and because I wanted to create a place where other mothers could go and their writing would be taken seriously, and it would be nurtured and critiqued. And so it was out of that class that my new book, Need Your Words, grew.
Now, I find it interesting, and I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm starting to realize it, but the aspect of motherhood and so on and so forth is certainly evolving, and it's in the news everywhere you turn around. We're talking women's rights and contraceptive and reproductive rights and all that stuff, and it somehow enters into motherhood, I understand, but I'm not going to get off on that tangent because I don't want to go there today. But there is a great amount, in my mind, there is a great amount of attention being paid to motherhood, and I know this, and I know this and see this because my daughter has two girls, and she's in the mommy groups. She does whatever she does for her fitnesses. She takes the girls everywhere, classes, kindergarten for one, tumbling classes, dance classes, raises the girls, keeps the house, the whole nine yards. And she's in these various mommy groups. And now when you add Pinterest into the mix, there is really a lot of mommyhood going on out there that is coming to the fore, isn't it?
Yes, there is. I mean, I think this is a great time for mothers because there are so many different ways that we can connect with one another. And so I think it helps us not be isolated. But I think it's challenging right now because there's so many. I mean, my mom talks about this as a way, like she thinks it's harder in a way for me and my sister who has three kids because we don't have necessarily a community of mothers that's built right in. And my friends are working full-time or part-time, and I'm working full-time and writing and doing this thing. And so it's hard to kind of connect sometimes. And I think that's where the internet and blogging, all of these motherhood blogs and Pinterest and these different ways for us to connect and share ideas and experiences, I think that's so important right now because I think we're stretched in so many different ways.
Well, the book that we're going to talk about here today, Use Your Words, when did you write that book?
You know, I feel like I started writing it when I began teaching, so that would be in 2006. So it's been a long time coming, but really it was when I turned my class into an online class. I teach it at the Loft Literary Center in Minneapolis. But then I, through my blog, connected with other mothers in Texas and other places around the country who said, I want to take your class, but I'm not in Minneapolis. Make it, you know, put it online. And so I developed my class into an online version, but I had to take all of the notes and outlines and little kind of thoughts in my head that I just kind of teach and it's just there. I had to create those, turn them into lectures online. And so I wrote everything out, and it was as I was doing that that I realized, hey, it feels like I'm writing chapters to a book. And so that's really when I started doing that, and that was in 2009. And then I wrote a few more polished chapters and got an agent, and then we shopped the book around for a while. And then after it was accepted by Viva Editions, which is just such a great press, that's when I really cranked out the other, you know, 5 or 10 chapters. So I did that, most of that work in, you know, 5 months, but I realized how much work I had done for the book prior to that, just going to speak at different writing conferences or writing on my own blog about kind of balancing motherhood and writing. So it was a couple of years of work, probably 6 years total, you know, since I started really thinking about these issues.
So as it sits right now, you have how many children?
I have two daughters. My daughter Stella is 8 and a half, and Zoe is just turned 4.
Okay, great ages.
They are great ages, yeah.
And as I said, I've got a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old granddaughters, and it's just absolutely amazing.
It's so fun.
When I was 6 or 3, I don't think I was as astute as these two girls are, and I'm sure yours are as well. They learn so much more, so much faster than I ever did. I'm still learning some stuff that they're just that they're getting right now.
Exactly.
You say you're working full time now. Is that full time work in your business, or do you work in another business?
No, actually, I was just doing freelance kind of writing and teaching and mentoring of other mother writers on my own, and then finished this book and have my memoir about my daughter's birth is being shopped around. And I thought, you know, it's time that I can help a little more with household things. And so I have been working full-time since September in development and marketing for a nonprofit in the Twin Cities. So lots of grant writing and social media marketing. And then I squeeze my own kind of writing and book publicity into the edges of that after the kids are in bed or kind of early on the weekend morning. So it's a little more hectic than I'd like, but it's working for now.
What is your hope for your book? Well, before I go there, let me ask you another question before I go there. What would you suggest for aspiring mommy authors or people that maybe haven't even thought about being a mommy author yet, but they just think that they have something to say? What kind of words of wisdom could you give them?
You know, I think it's so important to be writing things down. And I think writing as mothers allows us to really gain perspective on our experiences as mothers, but also lets us celebrate our children in a different way. And sometimes, especially if you have young kids, it's hard to find those moments where you're really appreciating and celebrating them in the middle of a hectic day. And so I think that gaining perspective, and also writing through heartbreak. I mean, I think that that's one thing that we don't always talk about as mothers, but there's a lot of heartbreak out there. And if, I mean, I have students who've lost children and come to my class as a way to try to process it. And they're able to gain perspective on it. And so I think to start with the detail is important. I think it can be really daunting if you haven't been writing or if you're a beginning writer to say, oh my gosh, where would I begin? And so one exercise that I really love is from the book is called A Moment in Time. And so I encourage mothers to just think about a moment with their children or one of their children that they don't want to forget. And then start there and really focus on sensory details, like the details that are connected to sight and sound and touch and smell. And then write it down in as much detail as possible, focusing on where are you, what does the light look like, and be really physical in those descriptions. And then see where it leads you, because I think sometimes, too, the great thing about writing is that it's always an act of discovery. So if you start writing, you might think you're going to write about one thing, and you're led in a completely different direction. And I love that, because I think that's where the real kind of the growth happens as both a writer and as a person.
Well, I know that to be a fact. I mean, I've done a little bit of writing myself, and I'm compiling a book slowly. But you're right. You sit down and you say, wow, I'm on fire today. I really have something to say. And you start putting it down there. And before you know it, you are going in such a different direction than what you intended when you sat down. You don't even recognize what your original thought was because it's basically nowhere to be found on the page.
Exactly. And I think I really encourage my students always to just go with that. And wherever you're drawn, and because sometimes some of the stuff that's hard, too, we don't think, oh, I'm going to sit down and write about that because it's too scary. But then you might find yourself going there in different ways and kind of coming in the side door or back door through writing about other things. And that's really where the meat of the story often is.
Deborah always says to me, and because she's saying, Pete, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. And I say, oh, man, who cares about what I've done or who cares about my view on things? And she says, people are all writing books, and whether they're somebody or not somebody, whether they think they're somebody or they don't think they're somebody, everybody has something to say. How do you think about that?
I really agree with that. And I mean, one of the things is that all our stories are different, but there are universals that exist in all of our lives, and we're all touching on some aspect of the human experience. And so it's interesting, if I pick up a story about or an essay about a boxer, I mean, boxing does not really interest me, but if the author is really getting in there and examining his life, immediately sucked in because it's saying something. I'm learning something, number one, about boxing, which I never thought I even needed to know. But then also, I can say, oh, isn't this interesting? This is somebody from a totally different background, very different interests, and yet we share this similar experience or feeling or kind of way of seeing the world. And I think that that's one of the things I love most about writing is that at writing and reading, and that's what I've tried to do in my book as well, is pick pick essays and poems. Each chapter has an essay and poem and like a mini craft lecture, but that really speak to a wide variety of mothering experiences. And my hope is that readers will kind of come away from the book with a greater sense of community, that we all, gosh, we're all kind of in this together, aren't we? And it doesn't matter that I wouldn't have made these choices or those choices, but I can see how this author would have done that. And that's one thing that's very important to me.
See, I feel a little differently. I think that what you would have to say as writing as a mother, what my daughter would have to say writing as a mother, others would say about various topics that maybe grandparents and grandparenting and so on and so forth, all along around the lines of family, let's say, use that as a topic.
Mm-hmm.
I would be very willing to do the compilation, take some of yours and attribute it to you and some of my daughter and attribute it to her and put that together in an anthology almost an anthology, and put that together as a compilation and then present that rather than presenting me. Because I don't, this is one thing that Deborah and I have had very long discussions about. I don't feel like I am or that I should be a guru. Who am I to impose my thought process on somebody?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wrote a blog about gurus.
that was
pretty tongue-in-cheek about how does somebody get to be a guru? And it's a little one-pager, but it was kind of fun. But I don't know that I want to do that. Be known as the expert in the area of whatever. Although you know, I guess maybe when you stop to think of it, I could well be considered to have some expertise in certain areas. Is that what you're saying? Basically, somebody always has expertise in some area?
You know, yeah. I mean, not exactly. I think that, I mean, I definitely don't think I'm an expert in motherhood or even writing. I feel like I've kind of created this niche for myself where I can help mothers tell the stories they need to tell and get those on paper with sort of these elements of craft that I can teach them through my book and blog and classes and whatnot. But I think that I'm less concerned with expertise and more concerned with what a writer is kind of as creative nonfiction and kind of memoir, that kind of umbrella under which memoir and essay and all those things fit, is the real story is between the relationship of between the subject and the writer herself. So it's the sense that the author is making about something, whether it's a certain time in her life or motherhood or children or some tragedy that they underwent. And so I'm concerned with kind of what an author does on the page to kind of explore, like, what does it mean? What do I really think about this? So much less, I feel like none of us are really experts in anything, but it's this kind of discovery in a memoir or kind of a short piece that I'm really intrigued by, if that makes sense, the difference.
Sure. What is it, when you've got your book together and people are reading it, now what do you hope to take away from this book?
Well, I hope that even writers who are beginning writers, I hope that if they've come to the book maybe being interested or not even that interested, and that they leave, finish the book with an understanding about how powerful it can be to write your experiences, your mothering experiences, and how it can change lives. I've had so many students who've written things down that felt scary to them to admit or write, and then they've shared it, and the overwhelming response has been, thank you so much for writing that. I've thought the same thing, or I know somebody who experienced a similar thing, and nobody ever talks about this. So I really hope that out of the book comes this sense of community, that we're all in this together, and also that when somebody's done reading the book, they say, oh, right, I have the skills to do this now if I want to blog or if I want to publish or if I just want to save these stories for my children or my family someday, that I know that I can do it and I know it's valuable work to really tell readers, like, this is important. It's important what you're doing. Writing about these experiences is valuable, and it can change lives.
When a writer writes a book, and I don't know, maybe you don't have the answer to this, or maybe you just want to give me your opinion. Do you think the writers write a book to become famous or infamous? Do you think they write, do you think they write a book for the money, or do you think they write a book for self-satisfaction?
You know,
What do you think is most often the case?
I think that it's some satisfaction, some need that you feel as a writer to write and keep writing. And for me, I mean, always this kind of idea, if I can change one person's life with the book that I put out into the world, then I've done my job. But it's definitely not fame and fortune, because writers just don't make very much money, which is why I have a day job now on top of everything else that I'm doing. So not fame and fortune. And so many books that are published nowadays, you already have to be famous and rich in order to get a book contract. So I really think that most writers write a book because they feel like they have something to say, whether they're writing a novel or short stories or a memoir, that they want to put their story out there because they feel like it's going to make a difference in the world and to people's lives. And I do feel like it's sort of a selfless act in many ways.
Mm-hmm. So does your book then fall in the area of a memoir?
Not this one. I really feel like it's more of a how-to kind of manual as a writing guide. But there are lots of personal stories that I tell in the book. And also I talk a lot about the writing of my memoir and how I did that, and how do you find an agent if you're interested in doing that, and how do you get out there in other ways. So I would call this more of a how-to book.
And what is the term memoir?
Memoir is a term that is used, it combines sort of mommy and memoir. And so I don't like this term, because I think it's something that we do in our society, is to sort of lump things together, and then they're much more easy to discard. I mean, I think when people call anything like chick lit or mommy lit or momoir, it makes people take it less seriously. And so I always like to say motherhood memoir or motherhood literature, just because I think that I think we're always in this uphill kind of battle to get taken seriously as mothers who blog or mothers who write. And so I always kind of stay away from those sort of cutesy terms and just say, this is motherhood memoir, and it's serious, it's important, and it deserves a place in literature.
Is that like calling a movie a chick flick?
Yes, it's exactly like calling a movie a chick flick, which I scolded my mom about. She said, well, I just called it that because that's what, you know, everybody was calling it. I said, Mom, you can call it a women's movie or like a romantic comedy or whatever you want to call it, but don't call it a chick flick. So I'm working on people with it.
Yes, because guys don't like to go see chick flicks.
Right, I know. And so if I just say it's something else, then my husband's very, he will let me drag him along to all of those things. So, but he knows what it is. He knows.
What do they say? Real men don't eat quiche or go to chick flicks.
Yeah. I don't know how fond he is of quiche, but he will go to those movies with me.
That's good. What have you learned through all of this teaching mothers and to be writers and so on and so forth? And then, what have any of those stories that the mothers are telling changed? Are they pretty much the same thing over time, or are they heading in different directions now?
Those are good questions. I feel really changed by teaching and the stories that I've heard. I mean, and one of the things that, because some of my students have had real tragedies in their lives with losing children, or some of them have come and they're grappling with having a child with special needs and really trying to process like how that experience is changing their lives and relationships with other children. And all of this has made me feel really grateful. I have two healthy daughters now. My daughter, who was born prematurely, she's just fine. Her health is great. And to really take time each day to be grateful for what I have. And also, I feel less alone in the world. Just to think, oh, all of these people are sharing these experiences with me, and they're trusting me with their stories and their sometimes very private stories. And so just kind of this very sense that we are in this together, and if we can take the time to listen to each other, we're all going to be better mothers, better people. And so that's one of the things that I've gotten out of my class. And now, Pete, I'm not remembering the second question.
Well,
I
mean,
just asked me too.
No, I did. Sorry for that. Have the stories changed over the years? I mean, have they been in different directions than what they're in now? And are the topics noticeably different now than they were early on?
You know, actually, I think that some of the same things come up over and over again. And I don't think they have changed, because I think that some of the main things that women are often dealing with as they're writing about motherhood are these issues of identity, kind of loss and longing, kind of who am I? You know, if I spend all day nursing this baby, what happens to this person who we go off to work every day? And then, you know, how have my own parents and how I was mothered, how does that affect who I am as a mother now to my children? So these are things that come up again and again in my classes, and the details might be different, but some of the universal themes are the same.
Yeah, so if a mother's tending to her child, nursing her child or something like that in the past days and maybe watching TV, now maybe she's watching something on the Internet.
But the rest
of it is the same.
Yeah, I really do think that there's just this kind of universal experience of motherhood that we're all kind of grappling with a lot of the same issues, and it may look different for one person or another person, but many of those issues are similar. And, I mean, one of the things that I try to do in the book is really use essays and poems from a diverse group of mothers, so both culturally and racially diverse, but also, you know, representing some women who have children with special needs or have adopted their children or, you know, whatever it may be, but that it's not all the same. It doesn't all look the same in the book.
See, I have a sister who has a special needs daughter who is in her 30s now. Still lives at home and always will until my sister is no longer there. And I keep telling my sister, and I've been telling my sister for years, that, boy, you have got so many experiences. You've seen this child through all kinds of sickness and bone marrow transplants and all kinds of stuff. And you know the ins and outs of where to get aid, how to get aid, what you have to do to get aid. Now, you could be an absolutely wealth of knowledge. And she is kind of like her older brother in the sense she says, well, people are already doing that. They don't need me to tell them. And I'm going,
They do need it.
So what I've got to do is I need to get two books, one for my daughter and one for my sister.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that's one of the things. I mean, I think that now, especially parents who have children with special needs, they are having the Internet out there and blogs and different online forums for families is so helpful. But I think just the basics of, like, how do you deal with the school district if you need to appeal things and your child isn't getting the support that they need in school? I mean, I think that is so helpful, and so many parents need that information, and it feels like they're having to learn it all over. You know, each parent is having to learn it on their own. And so that's the kind of knowledge that would be really helpful to have out in the form of a book.
Yeah, I think so too. But what about writing about that hard stuff? I mean, how do you get yourself to do that? I think, and what do you get out of it what do you think you get out of it after you've done it?
You know, I mean, I think it is hard some days. I mean, some days when I was working on my memoir, when my daughter was in the hospital, she was 17 days old, she developed sepsis, and when an IV line pulled out of her, a vein in her shoulder, and I got to the hospital and I thought she was going to die. And just this moment, and up until that point, I had really been trying to kind of hold myself back from loving her because I felt like, God, I don't want to fall in love with her because what if she's going to die? And it was that day that I was like, I love you. I'm sorry, I love you, you know, and really, and that scene was incredibly difficult for me to write. And some of that distance that I felt earlier before that moment, and I would be kind of tearing up in the coffee shop writing it and sometimes feel like, oh, I can't go there today. But getting it down on paper gives you this distance from it, and you're able to really let it go after that. Like, yes, this happened, or yes, I felt this, and I'm separate from it, and it's right there, and I can look at it on the page, and it really, for some people, helps diffuse the power of fears or of things that they felt or thought that they're ashamed of feeling, and just to get that away from them. So I think it's really a therapeutic process, and then after it's on the page, you can take time to really craft it into the art if you want to create an essay out of it. And some people might not want to go that far with it, but they might want to just get things out and get them down and then be able to, you know, take a breath and be like, okay, that's done. I don't have to worry about this anymore.
Well, I'm sure you can appreciate how fortunate you are that your young daughter survived a bout with sepsis.
Yes.
We had a doctor on the show within the last week, and the topic of the discussion that we had with him was sepsis. And I never realized what a ravaging disease that is and what a ravaging illness that can be. And the number of individuals that do not survive a bout with sepsis and the number of individuals that have lingering effects after surviving a bout with sepsis. It's absolutely amazing to me. And I just went, wow.
Yeah. It's very,
so
scary.
You are very, very fortunate to still have her.
Yes. Yeah. And it was that moment. And when a preemie gets sepsis, I mean, it just ravages their system because they're already so small. And any kind of localized infection so often turns into sepsis because they just don't have the immune system and they just can't fight it as well as an older kid. But they just pumped her full of different antibiotics, and she had an IV jutting out of her skull, which was disconcerting to see, but she made it through, and it's just, and I still think, I mean, I get kind of shaky thinking about that day because I'll never forget what she looked like because she would stop breathing then. She had a lot of apnea associated with it and would stop breathing and have these long bouts, and it's devastating.
Yeah, absolutely. You're very fortunate, and hopefully someday she'll understand how fortunate she is as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's really the case. Tell me a little bit about writing about motherhood. Has it had any kind of profound effect on you personally?
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's interesting because my dad, who is he's an ordained Presbyterian minister, and he taught for years, taught theology at a small college in the Twin Cities, but and I haven't sort of followed in his footsteps in that way in terms of being an avid church grower, but I was talking to him about kind of this book and the responses that I've been hearing, and And he said, you know what, this is like your calling. You know, he said, I know when you're called to ministry, you have this sense of purpose. And he said, that's what you're doing, isn't it? I said, oh, that's it. This is the only thing that I do in terms of my work where I feel like I'm making this kind of incredible difference. And I just get chills sometimes thinking about the lives that are being touched when women can, you know, start to write about motherhood. And so I feel like I wouldn't have found that if I hadn't already been a writer. But then also, I mean, it was only this experience of becoming a mother that turned me into the writer that I am. So I felt like I had this, kind of had a purpose, felt very passionate about what I was writing, and then also very passionate about helping other mothers write. And so I feel like as a subject, this is sort of this is my passion, and helping give tools to other women to do the same.
It sounds like it's almost like a pay it forward kind of a thing with you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm very gratified in my classes, so I feel grateful for my students, and I definitely feel like I'm fed by their stories. But if I can impact other people's lives, and I think it impacts how we parent too, writing about, because we can really reflect on why do we do certain things. And so I think it helps kids when mothers are writing and being reflective about their roles as mothers and choices they're making, and learning to be more forgiving of themselves, because I think we're often very hard on ourselves as mothers.
Writing and work must have a pretty profound effect itself, number one. Number two, when you're writing and you're putting your thing, your thoughts on the paper, are there ever things that you say, no, that's just something I do not care to share? I mean, has that happened? No, I'm not asking you what they are, otherwise you'd be sharing them.
Yeah.
But are there things that you come across and you say, no, I'm not going to go there?
You know, there haven't been too many things. I'm much more careful on my blog, though. I think that I try not to actually write about my kids too much on my blog, because I want to respect their kind of privacy. And as kids get older, I think at some point it becomes trickier to navigate. Like, is this her story to tell or is this my story to tell? And so I really try to stay focused on, this is how I feel about this issue of motherhood, or keep turning it back on myself and really being critical about, okay, what was I thinking here? But I do okay everything with my husband. That's being, you know, in the book. He always gets to read all my books and essays and stuff first before I publish them. And he gets to say, oh, this, no, didn't happen that way. Or, you know, I don't know. But he's pretty open as well in terms of letting me write about his childhood. His mother suffered from schizophrenia, and her story, I mean, she enters into my memoir a little bit, and I always want to make sure that I'm not, you know, stepping on his toes or saying anything that he would feel uncomfortable with. So I think it's something as writers that we get to decide, you know, if there's something that you don't feel comfortable sharing. I often say, write it, you know, get it down on paper if you want, and then put it to the side. You don't ever have to do anything with it. You don't ever have to publish it. But maybe it keeps coming back up in your writing, and then you might want to explore it a little more.
There are any number of authors out there that it's just a tell-all, you know. It could be a tell-all about anything. Do you have any thoughts on that type of authorship?
Well, I do, and I mean, I think that I think I just try to remind my students and myself. I mean, I think it's this very, very confessional, like airing of dirty laundry that we see, you know, on some blogs and on the internet and on talk shows and things. What's different about that is that the individuals involved don't seem to be looking at themselves critically and interrogating, you know, what is really going on here? Like what? And I think that's the difference between a well-written memoir and then some of this other stuff that feels very confessional to me, is the author isn't present trying to make sense of something, like trying to get to the bottom of a problem and figure out, okay, how does this change me? What is this? And often they're not turning a critical lens on themselves. And so it lacks depth, and it's just kind of this view that is out, like, this is what happened, this is what happened, but no kind of examination about, what does this mean for me? How did this change my life? And what can I take forward with me from this experience?
What are some examples, if you can give them to me, to our listeners, of writers that you helped, and that it has, the fact that they have finally written their memoir or their told their story, that it has had a profound change in their life? Are there any examples you can cite?
Yeah, actually, I have a student who, she came to my class after, she heard me on the radio in the Twin Cities and was in her car driving and pulled over because she started to cry. Her second daughter had died of SIDS less than a year before, and she was 10 months old, and she emailed me after the radio show, and actually this was an online class, and the class was full, but she said, I know your class is full, but I need to take it. And of course I let her in, and she just credits this with saving her life. And I think one of the things that she was feeling so desperately sad about was that she was so worried she was going to forget about her daughter, Sophia, and forget the way she held her head or the way she laughed or did these different things. And so she began to really write, kind of documenting these moments of her daughter's life. But then also she had written something to me very recently, and I happen to have it right here, in her email. She said that she first took this class with me, she's noticed how writing mirrors her grief in so many ways. And so I always call it writing the hard stuff. How do you get that down on paper? But she can now see this and see in her own words that she was a good mother to her daughter, Sophia, and that she can continue to be a good mother to her other three children. She now has two children who, after Sophia died. And she has said, you know, this saved my life. Like, I didn't think I was going to be able to go on mothering and living, and only through writing have I been able to see that I am a good mom, I was a good mom, and I can move forward, even though I think it's still hard for her every day. I think she wakes up thinking about Sophia every morning. So, I think it can be this lifeline for people.
Well, just the mere fact, I mean, and I, my heart goes out to anybody that's lost a child, regardless of how it's happened. But
yeah.
You're not supposed to bury your children.
Right.
That's not on the timeline. There's a prescription. And burying your children is not supposed to come into that. And
exactly.
It's just got to be devastating.
And so what do you do? I mean, it's like this thing that you, and I have another student who recently lost her son, and it was just heartbreaking. I knew him only through his mother's writing because she had been my student for many years, and I felt like I lost him as well because I felt like I knew him through these pieces. And then what do you do? I can't imagine, and I think that one way out for people is to try to write their way out of grief, write the way through grief. I don't think you ever totally get out of the grief, but to write your way through it and see if it helps someday.
Right, right. Is there anything that surprised you or was particularly challenging when you wrote this book?
You know, one thing that was hard, just because I was trying to get this diversity of voices in the book, I had to... It was challenging to be able to find, I want to represent, you know, I want to make sure I have an African-American writer, but this piece also needs to be something that I can use to talk about reflection, or, you know, I want this kind of, you know, I want to have this kind of writer, but I also need something that was tricky for me to kind of pair up the craft issues and sort of the topics of each chapter with then a piece that would be well-crafted, well-written, and could speak to one issue that I wanted to cover in the book. And as I was putting it together, I mean, I had a lot of issue getting permissions for pieces from some of the bigger publishing houses, and so I was kind of constantly rearranging and pulling things together. And so that was definitely a challenge, but I think that the book, because I was forced to kind of pull things out and move things around, like I was able to do some more of my own writing in the book, and I think that ultimately made it a better book. But I was definitely pulling out my hair, like, as I was reaching my book deadline, thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to pull this all together here? So, but I think it came together just how I would have wanted it.
That's good. What advice could you give to mothers that are interested in beginning to write? I mean, there's got to be something you could say that would maybe be instrumental in them picking up the pen or the word processor or the word, the computer, however they're going to do it. What could you
say? I think it really helps. I'm not a writer that believes you need to write every day to be a serious writer. And I think for moms especially, you know, maybe it's only one day a week. Maybe you go to a coffee shop on a Friday morning, or maybe it's during nap time if you have small children. So to first be really realistic, don't say you're going to write every day if that's not feasible. And then to pick one moment. You can either pick, you know, focus in on the details and pick one moment that you want to remember. And maybe it's like one of your first memories of your children when they were little, or maybe it's something more recent. But to focus, zoom in on that moment and just write as many details as you can using those senses. And then let yourself go. See where else you're drawn. And I think for grandparents as well, like sometimes memories will come up of their children that have been, they thought were long gone. I think the more you write, the more you're going to remember. And you may start writing instead about your grandchildren, and then some of the comparisons, oh, this feels different than when I was a parent. That's always an interesting thing that comes up for my students who are grandparents, these comparisons between their own parenting and parenting their children versus being a grandparent.
Mm-hmm. Does the fact that when you're writing, it may or may not come to you, or something may or may not come to you, affect whether or not you tried it? I mean, do you ever try to force something? Do you say Thursday at 10 o'clock in the morning, that's what I'm going to write, every Thursday at 10 o'clock in the morning? Or do you say, I will wait for it to come to me, and I'll know when it's time to sit down and write? How does that work? Or
you
is it a combination?
I think it's a combination, but for me, and really because of my very limited time, and even, I mean, since I became a mother, if I had 2 hours to write, I would write for 2 hours. I used to be this procrastinator who waited for inspiration and kind of for the muse to shine her special light on me, and she's very unreliable, and so I didn't actually get much writing done before I became a mom, and it was after that that I said, if I want to be serious about this, you know, the days that I can go to the coffee shop and work, I'm sitting down and I'm writing. And I think that if you can do that, say every Friday at 10, you know, you will, if you start to put a pen to paper, something is going to come out. And sometimes it helps if you take a book along and read for a little bit before you're writing and just get kind of the juices flowing. But I have students who say, you know, I can't do a schedule. And so instead they might say, I'm going to write one short essay, 5 pages, a month. And so wherever I can fit that in my month, I'm going to figure out, you know, how that happens and kind of go with that inspiration when it comes. But I have to do 5 pages a month. And so I think that's a different way of approaching it as well, if you don't feel like you can do, you know, every Thursday at 10.
I understand that the book has essays and poems and so on and so forth from any number of women. Is there anything that you would like to have had in the book that was not included, or that you would like to have included?
Yeah, I mean, there are some. I wish that I had a few older mothers in the book. I mean, I have women who, you know, have college-age kids or older now, but they're writing about when they were young. And so I wish that I had space to include a few more pieces by mothers writing about adult children. But I can always do another. Maybe I'll do grandmother words next, or grandmother, use the words for grandmothers. But then the other thing is the kind of one group that I wasn't able to include was people from kind of a lower socioeconomic status. And I just couldn't find pieces that fit into, you know, I need this to do and this to do. And so I'm always out there looking for new things. So if people find something, I love it when they email me and say, have you read this? This would be great for your class. So I'm always on the lookout for pieces that might reflect even a wider audience.
I had an author on just yesterday, and she also has a company called the Pen of the Writer. She's an African-American woman. Her name is Valerie J. Lewis Coleman, and she has written an anthology, Blended Families, an anthology, and it's about blended families and problems and interacting with mine, yours, and ours, and divorced parents. And the other parents still wanted to be involved in the raising of the child. It was an interesting conversation. She would be one that I can recommend, that if you're looking to do something with a different bet. You might want to call her, get in touch with her. Her name
is wonderful. Thank you.
J. Lewis Coleman, and you can hear the show on the Blog Talk, on our Blog Talk site as well. You can listen to that show as well. So
wonderful.
When I heard you say that, I said, "Well, maybe she should talk to Valerie."
Perfect.
You use a lot of the excerpts from your own memoir book. Did this change how you viewed the material after you looked at it again? Did it change your thought process about what you had written before?
You know, it was one of these interesting things, and partly I did that in the book because I was like, oh, I know the author. She's going to give me permission to use these excerpts. So I was able to kind of pull those things out. But I was pleased to see that I was doing what I was teaching in my book, and so I was able to say, oh, good. Oh, I could use this excerpt here for this because, look, I do just what I said I was going to do for my students, or what I want them to do. And so it was validating in many ways, but then in other times I was like, oh, I need to go in and do some more line editing, or, you know, it helped me kind of teaching. It makes me a better writer, definitely, in terms of thinking about craft as I'm sitting down to write and kind of having that distance of saying, okay, if this were my student piece, what would be my feedback? And so I can go in and kind of see it with a little bit more distance and then do some more cutting, and, you know, we can always cut out of our out of what we've written. So I go back and trim and tweak and all of those things.
Do you get involved in your writers and helping them publish their book and get publishers and so on and so forth, or do you just help them in the writing process and then maybe and send them down the road a little bit in to find their own ways with maybe a little bit of guidance from you?
Yeah, it's more the latter. I've done workshops on, you know, how to find an agent and things like that. So I talk a lot about that sort of thing with my students and give them tips. And one of the later chapters in the book kind of describes that too. Okay, now you're writing, like, what do you do now? What are some options? And so I'm an editor at an online journal called Literary Mama as well. So I can kind of speak to it from the editor's perspective as well as the teacher's perspective and the writer's perspective. So I try to help my students say, okay, this is what I would do. This is how I would approach an agent with this. So I sort of mentor them through, and then they kind of send things out into the world on their own.
We had early on in our radio show history, we had a gentleman on that used to work for some of the big houses, publishing houses in New York, and he was doing some things and starting to publish e-books, kind of before e-books really took off to be what they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he was saying was, because he was talking about hardcover books, and he said that many an author does not realize exactly what's expected of them from the publisher. And they want to look and see if they can get a big advance. But the fact is, if they're not out doing what they're doing, they're going to ask for that advance back, and you're going to have a garage full of books.
That's right.
So have you had an instance of seeing that, not for your stuff, but, I mean, have you seen that to be the case? And
absolutely. And I think that, I mean, things have changed so much in publishing that, I mean, luckily I knew, you know, early before I had even finished one of my books, I knew what was expected of me and that I would have to prove that I could be out selling books in order to find an agent and find a publisher. And so, I mean, that's one of the reasons, too, that I started to blog. I mean, it was to expand this discussion around motherhood literature, but also, hey, I have to start building an audience for these books. And so now I think you're more likely to find authors who are on Twitter and Facebook and blogging and really taking charge of their own marketing. And because publishing industry just doesn't have the resources to do it for authors anymore. And I think they do. If a book sells for $100,000, a publisher is going to put much more of their resources into making sure that it sells. But still, an author is expected to be blogging and tweeting and setting up some of their own things. So I've seen books, authors who've said, you know, oh, I didn't, you know, I kind of let the publisher do this one and the book didn't sell well. and it was this really rude awakening. So it's great. I mean, I think some of the smaller presses actually do a much better job of working with authors to do it as a joint effort. And I know that's certainly been my case with Viva. I think they've done a fabulous job supporting me and trying to find venues for me. So.
Well, I tell you, I've thoroughly enjoyed working with the house that you're associated with. It's been a lot of fun, and they're just wonderful, wonderful people to deal with from my standpoint. So
yeah.
I'm sure they're probably very good as far as yours. One last question I have for you, and that is, in one of the chapters, I understand that you discuss ethics about writing about your children. How do you reconcile the two things, one being the need to write and, of course, the privacy of your children or your other subjects for that matter?
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that comes up in my classes all the time. People say, okay, now I've written this hard stuff or I've written these stories about my kid. Is it okay for me to send it out in the world? And, I mean, I think it's going to be different for any writer. It's just what you feel comfortable with. Like I try to keep my kids more off the internet and the blogs, but I might write, you know, harder things about motherhood in a book because it's less accessible. But I think that you have to sort of come to it and decide at some point, you know, which part of the story can I share, or is this intruding on my child's privacy, because we're here to protect them and make sure that they're safe. And so I think it does kind of raise the stakes from other writers. But I think it's important, too, that our kids know how much it means to us to be writing and putting words on the page. And I think that there is a way that we can do both, but sometimes you have to be more careful. Or when your kids get older, maybe they get to read what you've written and decide whether they want it out in the world or not. So mostly I just want it to be in people's minds before they start sending pieces out for publication. Just, you know, think about these things, figure out where you stand, and how can you still write what you need to write and respect the privacy of your family members.
Well, Miss Kate Hopper, we're down to the short rows, as the farmers say. And I'd like to have you tell our listeners and for posterity on the replays how they can get hold of you, your website, and any information, because people can contact you, I'm imagining, from anywhere in the country or around the globe, and you can help them with what they're doing. So,
absolutely.
Give
Thanks
us
so much, Pete.
You're fine.
Okay, thanks so much, Pete, for having me. And my website is the best way to get a hold of me, and it's just www.katehopper.com. And I have online classes that are listed there, as well as all my appearances and things that are coming up. So katehopper.com, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Believe me, I've got your phone number here, and I want to give you a call as soon as we're off the line. There was something else I wanted to mention to you about this that I wanted to deal with offline. So
okay.
I appreciate your being here, and it's been a great hour. It's been a very fast hour. I looked up, and the clock is almost done. So with that, I'll say goodbye, and I'll talk to you very shortly. Have a great day.
Okay.
All your busy
thanks,
afternoon.
Pete.
Take care
okay,
now.
Okay, thanks so much, Pete. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show on Blog Talk Radio, where we bring good conversation and information. Today, a conversation with Kate Hopper, author of Use Your Words. KateHopper.com is the place to go to see what it is that she has to offer and how she might be able to help you with your writing if you're so interested. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, where you can get hold of us as Boomer and Babe. And also you can hear us right here on blogtalkradio.com/ Boomer and Babe. So with that, I'll say goodbye. Make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Another great show tomorrow. I hope you can join us. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great day. Listening to the Boomer and the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com.
email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.